The Mishnah tells us that in two cases, you would have been chayev, you should have been chayev for korea, and korea is one of the 39 categories of malach, which means ripping, but you potter. And if we read the Mishnah correctly, then the Mishnah is telling us why you potter. And the answer is because of what? Mekalkil. And we define mekalkil as a destructive act. What are the two cases of korea that the Mishnah mentions? The first is korea bechamoso, and the second one is korea al meso. Now, why do I say that in these two cases he's potter because of mekalkel? And the answer is because the Mishnah continues and then gives a general rule, v'chol ha-mekalkelin pturim. As if to say that these are two specific cases, but there's a general rule. These are examples or samples of a general rule. So what is the general rule? Kol ha-mekalkelin pturim. Now, my friends, you're going to have to memorize those three words. I can't help you. It's going to come up over and over and over again. By September 4th, we'll probably have said it a dozen times. Okay? So therefore, the vav of v'chol ha-mekalkelin pturin is as if to say, and also, or and beyond, all ha-mekalkelin pturin. So that's the v'chol. Vichal, and you should know, says the Mishnah, that all mekalkelin are pturin. Now, the first question we want to ask, although I'm not ready to answer this question, is why? Why is a mekalkel potter? Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the philosophy of Shabbos of Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch. Are you familiar with that? That God created the universe, but he terminated that creation and took a rest on Shabbos, and we have to refrain from creating on Shabbos, in that sense we're imitating the Almighty. Any creative act, therefore, that constructs or builds the world has to be prohibited. So I'm just pointing out here that although our class today is not a philosophy class, I give philosophy, if anybody wants to join me, on Sundays and Tuesdays here in this same room at 11 a.m. and I try to combine that with the parsha if I can. So it's a parsha and hashkafah here. So that's at 11 a.m. on Sundays and Tuesdays. I figured free advertising, you know, nobody's charging me, so I'll push it in. But on a philosophical level, we could say that mekalkel is not... What do you say?
It's the opposite of...
It's the opposite of what Shabbos is all about. Shabbos means refrain from creating. Destroying is not problematic. It doesn't undermine the concept of Shabbos. So that's on a philosophical level. On a halachic level, exactly what mekalkel is and what it's called mekalkel and what constitutes mekalkel, that's a more complicated issue. Now, the Mishnah is going to go on in the second part, which I call the middle principle of the Mishnah, to tell us that there's something called al menas letaken, meaning that sometimes the act, if you isolate it, is destructive, but in a broader context, it is constructive. So sometimes we really have to destroy in order to create. We have a preliminary stage of destruction that's meant to prepare the way for construction. So you could imagine, let's say, a kablan who's hired to build a building, but there's some sort of old, decrepit churva, as we would call it, on the ground. So he's got to destroy that for the sake of building. Or, for example, I have two letters on a parchment, and I need to replace them with two other letters, so I erase the first two letters and I write two other letters. I have stitching which is crooked or zigzagged, and I have to rip apart the stitches, which is in and of itself destructive, in order to sew it together in an improved way. So in many cases, I have to get rid of something in order to build something and replace it. That's called mekalkel al menas letaken. And the Mishnah establishes that the shiur, every malacha has a minimum amount that you have to do. Like, for example, in ksiva, Shmuel, would you know what the minimum? Yeah, shtei otiyot. So you have to write two otiyot. So if you erase two otiyot in order to replace them with the two otiyot that you need, then you're chayev not only for writing the two letters, but you're also chayev for erasing the first two letters, which is called mechika. So again, if I had a blackboard, I would write the word mochek on the board. Mem vav ches kuf mochek. Now we skip to the Gemara. The Gemara says v'raminu. V'raminu means I have. Yeah, go ahead. Good.
So there's mekakel legamre. There's two principles here. So they have different halachas there, right? You have mekakel legamre, and you have mekakel shiur
l'tachi. Amanas l'tachi.
Okay.
So in the case of mekakel, you're potter, which means that if, let's say, you didn't know it was Shabbos, you don't even bring a Karban Chatas. Normally, if you violate Shabbos b'shogeg, you didn't know it was Shabbos, you have to bring a Karban Chatas. In this case, you don't even have to bring a Karban Chatas, because basically you're not guilty of a malacha. That's called mekalkel.
So, but it would be different for
amanas l'taken. If it's amanas l'taken, that converts the mekalkel into a metaken, and then you're chatz. So you want to just sit yourself down here. If it's okay.
Yeah, sorry.
If you're not afraid, you know, that I might bite you or anything. I don't really bite, so I'm pretty innocuous, generally speaking. Yeah. One day I'm going to bring in a water gun, and then you're in trouble. But in any event, so that's called Makalkal Manas Latake. Now, there's a very big question on this middle section of the Mishnah. What happens if he intended to write the two letters after he erased two letters, but he never got around to writing the two letters? Now, do I just need his intention at the time of Malacha A to replace it with Malacha B in a way that it improves what happened? Or does it's not enough that he intended to do so, but he has to actually do so. He has to realize that intention in real terms. Right, but what makes Mechika into a Malacha? It's the Almanas Lichtov. So is it just the Almanas Lichtov per se, or he actually has to write it? If it's just his mindset, it's a very interesting question. How do we know what he has in his mind? Especially we're talking about a shogeg where he doesn't even remember that it's Shabbos. So we have no way of knowing whether he was doing a destructive act or he's preparing for a constructive act. Was he erasing for the sake of erasing, and that makes it a makalkel? Or was he? How do we read his mind? And I think even in the most modern technology, we don't have a way of reading a person's mind. Am I right about that?
So far.
Now that might change. But even if it changes, I don't think we're going to be able to read his mind retroactively and figure out what was in his mind yesterday. Maybe we could read minds, you know, we'll see it on a big screen as he's thinking, but it's going to be really quite an invention if we could read his mind l'mafreya. What was he thinking yesterday when he erased these letters or when he ripped apart these stitches, you know?
Later on, or I don't know when, isn't there really gedder or takanot that the Rabbanim made that to just to forbid all this stuff?
I don't know. You're right. Usually when the Mishnah says patur, it means patur aval asur, meaning shvus, meaning a drabanum. I don't know if here the Mishnah means patur aval asur or not. So that's an interesting question that Manny's raising, whether or not there'd be a chiyuv, or I should say an isa drabanum. Our Mishnah is focused really on the karban shogeg. Is he chayav a karban for shogeg if he forgot it was Shabbos and he did this malacha? If I look at the malacha externally,
wasn't a malacha at all.
Right. So, but if I look at the pu'ula, right, he ripped his garment, then that itself is called korea. He should be chayav.
But how do you know he's shogeg? I mean, it doesn't actually say.
Oh, so shogeg means that A, we don't have a warning. We don't have Asra. And B, he himself realizes that he violated the Shabbos.
Afterwards.
In other words, once he you know, somebody says to him, whoa, today's Shabbos, then he automatically catches himself and he says, oh no, I just did X, Y, or Z, you know, did I violate a Malacha? Because we can't force a person to bring a carbon chatas. There's certain carbonos that maybe we could beat them up and so forth, but carbon chatas means that you want to get kapara for an avera, so you have to come forward and confess your crime.
Would it then be different if he did it intentionally? He knew it was Shabbos, but he just found out that his mother passed away and he rips. No, even knowing it's Shabbos, so is that going to be a different rule than what we're going to learn?
Well, did he think it was okay to rip? Or we're talking about a real deliberate, evildoer. He wanted to desecrate the Shabbos.
He's not an evildoer.
So then I would say...
There was no rabbi to ask. He didn't know...
Right. So that comes under a different sugya, which is called Omer Mutter. Omer Mutter means... in America, I think you'd call it like I plead the fifth kind of thing, meaning I didn't realize that this was illegal. Okay. In my understanding, my limited understanding, I thought that this was okay. So one man, the Omer in the Gemara, says that Omer Mutter is a shogeg, and therefore he brings a karma chatos. Another man, the Omer, says Omer Mutter is karav lemezid. It's a little bit out of shogeg. It's a little bit more deliberate.
Okay.
Because he should have been aware of the law before he did so. Don't start ripping garments on Shabbos until you get a rabbinic approval for that.
Right.
Okay, but that's already okay. That's it. So what's the Braisa? The Braisa says the following: Hakorea bechamoso bievlo v'almeso chayov v'afal pisha mechalas haShabbos yotzi yedei kriya. Now, there are many different elements in this braisa, but we want to make a little progress, so we're going to focus on the following two elements. Number one, korea b'chamoso, and number two, v'al mesa. Again, there are many other parts of the braisa, you'll have to sort of block them out for the time being, otherwise we'll never get to square one, as we say. So what we want to know is the following. In our mission, in the two scenarios of korea b'chamoso, Bechamoso and Korea Almeso, the Mishnah establishes that you're potter. In the Braisa, on the other hand, the Braisa establishes that in those very same two scenarios, you're chayav. So the Gemara says, Lo kasha, ha b'meis di day, v'ha b'meis di alma. And the way we're translating that is as follows. That one case is his deceased, his in inverted commas, and in the other case is Mace the Alma is someone who died from the world out there, and he's not his Mace. So Rashi explains that his Mace means that he's obligated to deal with the dead. He has to bury the dead, he has to cut kriya on the dead, he's got to sit as an ovel on the dead. All the laws that apply to a what? A relative, correct? A relative. Now, with regard to relatives, this was our discussion of yesterday. There are three categories of relatives. There's a relationship that you have to every Jew, then there's a specific blood relationship, like for example a first cousin, and then you have the seven close relatives. Only in that third category is there an obligation to cut kriya. In the middle category of a cousin, if there's no one else to bury the dead, then you're first on the list. I'm not talking about a mes mitzvah, which is a different category where the dead is lying on the road, chas v'shalom, no one's there to bury him. I'm talking about there are people to bury them. The question is, who has the responsibility to bury the dead? And in this case, although you're not chayev in the full blown avelus, but because you're a relative, you're obligated to see to it that relative is buried. The Mishnah is talking about a case of mes di alma, which means he's not even a relative of yours. He's a good Jew that passed away. But you have no obligation neither to bury him, nor to sit shiva for him, nor to even cut kriya for him. And therefore, ripping your garment, since it doesn't have any kiyum to it, it means as far as a mitzvah is concerned, there's no mitzvah here, therefore it's makalkel. The Bryce, on the other hand, is talking about a case of Mes di Day, meaning it's one of the seven relatives, the close relatives. He's chayav in the mitzvah of what? Of Kriya, and since he's chayiv in the midst of Kriya, by ripping his garment after the death of one of his seven close relatives, that kiyum mitzvah of ripping your garment, that makes you into a metaken, and it's not a makalkil. Therefore the Brisa says you're chayiv. So let's go over this. In the Mishnah, you're patur because of makalkil. Why is it makalkil? Because you ripped your garment. And you have no interest in ripping, you know, there's nothing improve. You don't improve anything by ripping your garment. So ripping your garment is destructive, and therefore you are patur midin makalkil. That's what's going on in our Mishnah. Says the Gemara, that's called Mace the Alma. It's not his debt. The Gemara in a minute is going to point out that it says Meso in the Mishnah, but before we get to that Gemara, the Brice on the other hand says Yochayev, because here it's considered Mitaken. What makes it into Mitaken? The Kiyum HaMitzvah of Kriya. Okay, so I need a, just to make this into a kind of a class participation experience, I need a choir here. Okay, so I need everyone to say the following thing together in unison. The Kiyum Mitzvahs Kriya. Can everybody say that? One, two, three. The Kiyum Mitzvahs Kriya. Excellent. Okay, we got a good choir here. I don't know who the soprano is, but we have a good choir. There's a Kiyum Mitzvahs Kriya. And when there is a Kiyum Mitzvahs Kriya, then a makalkil is transformed into what? Into a metaken. The Gemara says, "Va meso katani." How can you tell me that our Mishnah is talking about mes the alma, which means that he's not your relative? The Mishnah used the word meso in the possessive. It's your mess, and if it's your mess, it means that you're obligated in kriya. So the Gemara says, "Li olam b'mes di day." I agree with you. It's mes di day. It's his deceased. Ubahanat dolav b'nei avelus ninhu. But it's the middle category. And what's the middle category? That means it's a relative, and there are halachic implications in the fact that it's a relative, but it's not one of the Spitz relatives. It's not one of the seven relatives. So let's read the Gemara. Ubahanach, with regard to those, delav b'nei avelus ninhu. Meaning, these are relatives, but they don't engender avelus. B'nei avelus means they don't engender a chiyuv mitzvahs avelus. Now, kriya is part of the mitzvah avelus. What obligation is engendered by the fact that this person who died is your relative? Rashi says, li olam b'meis di day, and this is what I asked you to look up yesterday, shemutal olav l'kovro. So if you have the possibility of underlining, which Manny, you don't have that possibility because that's the Gemara of the Shifa, but Don, you could do that. Then I would ask you to underline the words Shemutal Olav Lekovro. So we're in Rashi, and we're counting down from the top of the page approximately 15 lines down. That's a very rough estimate. And you'll see a Rashi that begins with the words in bold, Li Olam B'meis Di Day. And if you find that Rashi, Li Olam B'meis Di Day, you'll underline the word Shemutal Olav Lekovro. Now, as Rashi wants to tell you that our Mishnah, which defines Korea at Al Meso as a Makalkel, right, it's destructive, has a chiddush. There's some new insight here that I wouldn't have intuitively guessed. I would have said that since it's Meso, it's a relative of his, then maybe the kriya is considered constructive. Maybe it's meaningful. Maybe it's a kiyum mitzvah. And the chiddush of our Mishnah is to tell you no. Even though it's meso, there's no kiyum mitzvah kriya. Now wait a second. We can divide up the response to the death of a relative into three categories. Category number one is kvura, meaning if it's your relative, you're obligated to bury him. Category number two is kriya, to rend your garments. And category number three is avelus, which means the 11 isurim that apply for 7 days after burial. Now, let's take two out of the three, leaving out the middle one for a second, and create polar extremes. One polar extreme is the mitzvah of avelus. Avelus in this case, as I said before, encompasses 11 different isurim that apply for 7 days. Well, shall we say six and change? Okay, because we applied principle. Okay, fine. That's avelus. That's the whole kit and caboodle. That's the real intense avelus. On the other extreme, we have what's called the mitzvah of, just 1 second, of kvura, of burial. Now, why do I call that the other extreme? Because even if this is not one of your seven relatives, it's a distant relative, we'll call it a cousin for our purposes, nevertheless, you're chayav in kvura. Now I have the middle category, and that's called kriya. So which way do I stretch kriya? You know, it's like two people holding on to a garment, each one's pulling in a tug of war.
Isn't kriya less? Because there's people that do kriya over that you don't do avilut over?
Oh, so you're a step ahead of me, Shmuel. Let me just formulate the question, and you already answered my question, okay? So my question is the following. If we have these two categories, we have avelus on one category, that's a category heading, and we have kvura, mitzvahs kvura, in the other category. Where do we put kriya? That's my question. Is kriya incorporated into avelus, or is kriya incorporated into chiyuv kvura? Meaning, shall I say the following? These are my two definitions. Definition number one is anyone who's obligated in avelus is obligated in kriya. Definition number two is anyone who's obligated in kvura is obligated in kriya. Again, if I had a blackboard, it would be a lot easier. But,
not according to the Mishnah.
No, I'm just saying, before we get to the Mishnah, man, just in theory, the Mishnah is coming to exclude one of those two definitions and confirm the other definition.
Well, if you find a met on the road, you have an obligation to bury him, but you're not an avelus, and you don't have to do kriya. Where if you were an avelus, it's one of the seven close relatives, you have to do kriya.
Okay, so the truth is, Don, that it's complicated. Why? And that's the next gemara, which we're going to skip. Okay. That there's something called an adam kosher. And you might find, under certain circumstances, that you're chayef in kriya for an adam kosher that you never met the guy in your life. It has to do with, were you there at the time that he died? Then there's another halach of a chacham. If he's not just an adam kosher, but you upgrade it to another level, it's called a chacham, then you're obligated in kriya without avelus, even though you never met the guy, and even if you weren't there at the time of what's called yitzias neshama. So that's why the laws of kriya are very complicated. And it's gan shayach that one could argue that kriya is part of what? Well, what were you arguing before?
Avelut.
Oh, you want to say it's part of avelut? It's gan shayach that kriya is not part of avelut. What would be my proof that kriya is not part of avelut? Well, before you get to that Mishnah, just in halachic terms, what I mentioned to you before, Adam Kosher, or Chacham. I mean, I'm not chayiv in avelus for a Chacham, I'm not chayiv in avelus for an Adam Kosher, and yet, I'm chayiv in kriya. So, I just want to point out to you, Manny, that you know, it's not, if somebody said, stood up in Rabbi Aaron Shia, let's say, back in Chicago in those days in the early 70s, and he said, Rebbe, I think that kriya is a separate chiyuv, and it's not part of avelus. Rabbi Aaron would not throw him out of class. It's a very serious possibility. And you might ask, well, how do I know in the case of a relative whether I'm chayv in kriya or not? And you might answer, well, if you have to bury him, that already establishes some sort of relationship to the dead. It's not just, you know, an emotional relationship, but it's a halachic relationship. That's what Rashi says, mutal ol of lakovo. That itself might engender a chiv what? A chiv kriya.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the Hava Amin in our Mishnah was. That even though it's a Maisdi day, which means that it's a cousin, and even though you're obligated to bury him, you're not obligated in kriya. You would have thought, you know, we're going to write our own Gemara now. I would have said, they came on the Chayav Be Kvura. Kishem shechayev be kvura, kachayev be Kriya, and therefore he's going to be chayv on Shabbos. Why is he going to be chayv on Shabbos? That's why he needed the choir from before. Because he had a kiyum mitzvahs kriya. Yeah. Do we have that? Kiyum mitzvahs kriya. Kol mashmalah, the Mishnah says no. Chiyuv kvura l'chud and chiyuv kriya l'chud. There are new rules, independent rules that operate with regard to kriya, and then there are other rules that operate with regard to kvura. You can be chayv in kvura and not chayv in kriya. If you're not chayv in kriya, you have no kiyum mitzvahs kriya, and therefore you're makalkel and you are potter and shams. The Bryce, on the other hand, is talking about a case where there's a chayv mitzvahs kvura. I'm sorry, not only a chayv mitzvahs kvura, but also a chayv mitzvahs avelus. And avelus generates a chayv kriya. So that kriya now is part of avelus. Ah, you'll ask me a kash if kriya is part of avelus. Why, in the case of a chacham, in the case of an olam kosher that I was there, b'yitzis nisham, why am I chayv in kriya? That's a different type of kriya. That's a kriya b'toras, what we call S. What's S? S l'rabos talmidei chacham. It says S Hashem elokecha tira, and the extra S comes to tell you that you have to have awe and respect for a Talmud Chacham, and that expressed itself in many different ways, but upon his demise, upon his death, in Kriya, in the case of an Olam Kosher, there's a separate Mechayev, a separate Halacha, that you were there, B'shas, Yetzias Neshama, and that requires a Kriya. But as far as your classical Kriya of Avelus is concerned, he who is Chayev in Avelus, i.e. one of the seven close relatives, is Chayev in Kriya. He who's not Chayev in Avelus, he has a separate mitzvah of Kvura. Although that's a mitzvah of kvura, it's a very significant mitzvah, but it's not avelus, and it doesn't engender a chiyuv kriya. And that's the case of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where the death of his relative, we'll call it a karov rachok, would engender a chiyuv kvura, but not a chiyuv kriya. And if there's no mitzvah and no kiyum of kriya, therefore it's mekalkel and yipotur. The Bryce is addressing a case where there's not only a chiyuv kvura, but there's also a chiyuv of avelus. And in the context of avelus, because it's one of the seven krovim, he's chayv in kriya, and the kiyum mitzvah kriya converts a mekalkel into a mesaken, and therefore the Bryce establishes that you're chayv. All that is going to help us with meso al meso, but we're only halfway there because there's another contradiction between our Mishnah and our Bryce, and namely what? Bechamoso against Bechamoso, because the Mishnah says that if you rip your garments out of a state of anger and anguish, you're potter on Shabbos. And the Brisa says, if you rip your garments out of a state of anguish and anger, you're chayav on Shabbos. That contradiction still remains outstanding. And the difference between one kind of relative and another kind of relative is totally irrelevant to the case of chamoso. Because chamoso means he is just angry. I don't know if, Rabosa, you ever had an experience of anger in your life. Most of us, you know, will admit the truth that at some point we're angry. And if we, you know, if we started thinking, you know, if we were laying on the couch and the shrink was trying to get us to bring up memories that are deep down in our past, and the shrink would say to you, remember five occasions on which you got really angry in your life, you know, and immediately remember a guy who insulted you publicly.
Wasn't
or
broken during that scene.
Right? And you remember a case that you got a notification from your boss that your relationship as an employer has been terminated, as an employee has been terminated. Again, hopefully nobody here ever had that experience, but if you did, you can get pretty angry, right? And what do you do for anger? So there are many things that are beneficial for anger. You know, some are recommended, some are not recommended. Murder is not an option. Unless you're getting angry at one of our enemies that surround us from within and without, then I would say it's not murder, it's a mitzvah, a mechias amolek. But whatever it is, we have a case of chamosa al chamosa. So at this point, Rabosai, what I'd like to put sort of on the side, meaning as if hakofa alf, we finished. We'll come right back to this in a few minutes, but for the time being, we finished. Is what we call meso al meso. Any questions on al meso al meso? Yeah, Doc.
Sorry, I'm confused over the definition of meso deo and meso dao.
Because
I was here last Thursday,
right.
and I thought you defined the Deo as a close relative and the Alma as a not close relative. But I thought I heard you say this morning. The Alma is any
friend. A fremde, we call it in Yiddish.
So
you know?
So now I'm confused.
Do you know that word in Yiddish, a fremde? A friend of me, he's a foreigner, he's alien, you're not related to him at all, you maybe never even saw the guy, you never met the guy, that's Maisti Alma. Then we get to Maisti Dei. Now what is Maisti Dei? So in Hebrew that's called Meiso, or in Ivrit that would be Meito, right? And the word Meiso appears in the Mishnah and in the Braisa. So we're very confused. So the Gemara says that Meiso means Maisti Dei, it's his deceased, which means he has a relationship, but there are two different categories on the Maisti Dei. And that's what I didn't know when you were here last. But today, I'm more enlightened. So what do I know now? There's a Maisti Dei, which is the full brunt of Avelus, from soup to nuts. And then there's a Maisti Dei, which is somewhere between the real McCoy Maisti Dei, which is the seven close relatives, and Maisti Alma, a guy that you never met before. What is that middle category? So we called it a cousin. Is it a first cousin? Is it a second cousin? Third cousin? Again, these are complicated issues. But whatever it is, let's call it a first cousin just to make life easy for ourselves because we're not learning Avelus. There's a mitzvah of kvura that is common that overlaps the following two categories. Maisti Dei and Maisti Dei. Wait a minute, those aren't two categories. You just repeated the same category twice. There's Maisti Dei, the real McCoy Maisti Dei, that generates a chiva of Avelus. And then there's the Maisti Dei, which is a relative, but there's no mitzvah of Avelus. What mitzvah does apply in the case of the more expanded scope of Maisti Dei?
Kriyan Avelus.
Well, Kriyan Avelus we don't know. Again, in the it's a language, my problem. So what I meant, the expanded meaning beyond the seven relatives, the expanded scope of the relatives, that's the broader Maisti Dei. So far, so good. What mitzvah does apply in the broader category of Maisti Dei? Exactly. Then you could wonder and vacillate, what about Kriya? And the answer is no. There's no mitzvah of Kriya. Kriya is part and parcel of Avelus.
Okay.
Good?
Yes.
So we got two Maisti Deis. There's the more limited, restricted Maisti Dei that is comprised of seven relatives, and then there's the expanded rate Maisti Dei that applies to distant relatives, like cousins. In the first case, there's a chiyuv avelus, and that generates a chiyuv kriya. In the second case, there's a mitzvah of kvura, but no mitzvah of avelus, and therefore, ipso facto, no mitzvah of kriya. How is this relevant to Hilchos Shabbos? And the answer is, if it's the more narrow definition of the seven krovim Maisti Dei, that's the subject of the Braisa, and there you chaya for kriya. It's a makalkal. The answer is, kiyu mitzvahs kriya converts it from a makalkal to a masakin. If it's the broader definition of Maisti Dei, which includes cousins, there's no avelus, and therefore ipso facto there's no mitzvah of kvura. That makes your kriya, there's no mitzvah of kriya, excuse me, and that makes your kriya into what? Makalkin. Excellent. I'm just thinking out loud. See, I'm thinking out loud here. This has just popped into my head. So, if you don't mind being my guinea pigs here, I'm just going to bounce off a svara on you. You know that a father is obligated in the mitzvah of chinuch to educate his children and prepare them for mitzvahs, correct? However, there are two categories of mitzvahs. One is the mitzvah shebeguf, a physical mitzvah. So for example, if I were to ask you for a knee-jerk response, kvura, is that a mitzvah shebeguf? Again, don't get confused. You may appoint a shliach to do the guf, you know, to physically do the kvura. But don't get confused by the chevra kadisha. Okay, imagine there is no chevra kadisha. So how would you classify kvura? Is it a mitzvah shebeguf? It's a mitzvah shebeguf. Okay. Then there's a different kind of mitzvah, which is a mitzvah shebalev. It's an emotional mitzvah. And it could very well be, I'll mention a tshuva about this, or one of the responsa, that with regard to chinuch only applies to a mitzvah shebaguf. It does not apply to a mitzvah shebalev. What tshuva do I have in mind? There's a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe regarding the issue of giving wine from Havdalah during the 9 days to a child. And in that tshuva, he analyzes the question whether chinuch applies to the mitzvah of abstaining, or the Isra, I should say, of abstaining from drinking wine during the 9 days, or if you're a Sfaradi, Shavu Shechal, but whatever the dinim are. And in that tshuva, he claims A and B, which leads him to C. A, he claims that Avelus is a mitzvah shebalev, and B, he claims that in a mitzvah shebalev there's no chinuch. And therefore, C, he claims that in Tisha B'Av and all that's relevant to Tisha B'Av with regard to Avelus, Tisha B'Av is also Yom Tainis, that's a different halach, but as far as Avelus is concerned, there's no mitzvah of chinuch for Avelus. Meaning, if I can't feel the loss, that's not Avelus. And he goes very far. I think he says that if a person would sit Shiva, Rachmana Litzlan, and observe to the T all the 11 Isurim of an Avel, but he's in a good mood, he's happy, you know, whatever, I'm not going to go into detail.
Inheritance.
Yeah, maybe over inheritance, or worse than that, you know. But he's not Makai in the midst of Avelus. In other words, the key of keys to Avelus is the emotional element. And he says that to educate a child to feel Avelus, that's not within the purview of Chinuch. So why do I mention this? Because the thought occurred to me, would there be an element of chinuch with regard to the discussions that we had today? And I would say the following. One element of what we've discussed today is the chiyuv kvura. So let's say you have a healthy, robust 11-year-old or 12-year-old young man, right? His bar mitzvah is in a month. He's 12.9. And my grandson's bar mitzvah is not this Shabbos, but one after. Thank you. His name is Gavriel Berzon, and he lives in Modi'in. So we're going to all be in Modi'in, not this Shabbos, but Parshas Ki Tetzeh. So Gavriel is a very strong young man. And, you know, he could bury the dead, or at least be part of, you know, the team that's burying the dead. But he might not be chayv and avelus at all, even from a perspective of chinuch. But there would be chinuch for kvura. Are you with me on this?
Yeah.
If our premise is correct, that chinuch is limited to a mitzvah shebaguf, but it doesn't apply to avelus insofar as it's avelus shebalev, there would be an interesting question about the loss of a cousin in the case of a child meaning a minor who's 12.9 years old in a male. Right? So I want to know if he lost a cousin, Rachmana Litzlan, and in many families, you know, the distance in age between the oldest cousin and the youngest cousin could be 50 years. I don't know if anyone has that in their family. I know in my family, there's a tremendous, you know, and the more children you have, the more it's going to come up in the next generation, that you could have a first cousin who could be 60 years older than you, or certainly 50 years older than you. This is common, mamish common. So the question is, this child is 12.9, he lost his first cousin, Nebuch, but it's not such a Nebuch, because his first cousin is an old man, he's not a youngster, so it's not tragic, but okay, he died. Is there any mitzvah chinuch vis-a-vis this child who's 12.9, in the case of a cousin? What would be your answer? Am I pulling teeth here? I didn't take dentistry in college.
He participated in the burial, but not the
Oh, there would would be chinuch in kvura. And even if we use a gadol, there's nothing beyond kvura, because again, we're talking about a first cousin. A first cousin has no avelus, has no kriya. You with me on that? Okay. Now, I want to change the scenario. It's not a first cousin, but it's one of his seven close relatives, Rachman al-Litzah. Do I add anything? Do I add anything to his mitzvah of chinuch?
Only if it's a mitzvah of kufa.
The answer is no. Why not? Because kriya is part of avelus. And if there's no chinuch for avelus, then there's no chinuch for kriya. Okay, just bouncing a thought off you that occurred to me as we were talking. You'll get used to my
another interesting thing. What it was between stages, you know, he died he died when he wasn't bar mitzvah yet, but during the days of Avel, he's already bar mitzvah.
Uh-huh. So the question is, what's machayev avelus? Is it the misa? Is it the kvura? Is it the 7 days? You know, can somebody be potter from avelus at the beginning of Shiva and then pick up a chiyuv Shiva in the middle? If I remember correctly, there's no such thing. That's a sugi in Ksubis, actually. How did it get to Ksubis? Because in Ksubis there's a whole discussion there on Daf Dalet about the death before the wedding and the death of the father of the chassan, the mother of the kala, etc., etc. Okay. Now, Rabosai, we put this all on the side. That's called what I called meso al meso. And now we're up to chamoso al chamoso. So for this, I want you to fast forward to the word tenach, which is one line below Tosis dibra maska lo tzricha. You have Tosis lo tzricha? If you move your finger across, you'll see lama, right? Mm-hmm. And then the line below starts with the word delo. Okay, and then we go up to tenach. Now, I want you to feel comfortable about everything that we skipped, because everything that we skipped has to do with the laws of kriya, but not kriya as part of avelus, but kriya as part of kvod chacham, kriya as part of yitzias neshama. So we're focused on Shabbos this month, and therefore I allow myself, you know, to skip tenach meso. I understand how you reconcile the contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa with regard to meso. Ela chamoso, achamoso, kasha. How do we reconcile the contradiction between the Mishnah, which says that chamoso is patur, and the Braisa that says chamoso is chayav? And again, basically, if we want to put on our thinking caps, the Gemara is now analyzing the following question. If I rip a garment out of anger, is that constructive or is it destructive? Now, I don't know if you're familiar a little with Brisk. Have you ever heard of Brisk? Brisk was a city in Poland that had a long, long tradition of Talmudic analysis in a very unique way. And the question is where it began. We're not sure how far back it goes in history, but one of the greats was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. That was my Rebbe's grandfather. And Reb Chaim was famous for always analyzing gavra cheftza. You know, is it in the person or is it in the object? So what would you say if I was very angry, and in order to sort of calm myself down, I had to rip a garment, you know, or if I was a karate expert, I would chop this table in half. Would you say that is constructive or destructive? I need a gavra chefta chakir over here. What would you say, Don?
Destructive.
But you're looking at what? At the chefta. Now, if you look at the gavra, which is the person, and he has, I'm looking for a word in psychology, but I'm not finding it.
Released,
excellent, relieved his anger, right? Then he's in a better situation after he rips his garment than he was before.
Okay.
Hopefully, again, if we get the psychologist, okay, you know, because you know he was about to murder someone, so instead he ripped the garment to shreds. So that's better than the alternative. So I don't know how to analyze Koreal Chamoso. Is that called a Makalkel or a Masake? again, if I use Hershean terms over here, the philosophical terms, I would say that constructive means that you've improved the universe. Maybe to improve the universe, let's say this beged that I ripped was worth 10, now it's worth 0 or worth 1. So in terms of the universe, I really destroyed something. Or shall we say, well, maybe the human being in his anger and his psychological state, that's also part of the universe. Maybe that's also, in Hershean terms, might be constructive. So now the Gemara has the following problem. The Mishnah says that Koreh B'chamoso is potter. Obviously defining it as what? Everybody? Mekalkia. The Brisa says that if you rip your garment out of anger, you are chayef. Obviously defining it as what? Metake. Oh. So what is it? Is it Mekalkia or Metake? So we have a stira between the Mishnah and the Brisa. So the Gemara says, no problem. I have a very simple solution. It's so simple that I lost a lot of sleep on this. That's how simple it is. Lo kasha, harab Yehuda, harab Shimon. In other words, at this point, we have no way of reconciling the Mishnah and the Braisa unless we introduce some old, well-known debate or controversy between, in this case, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. They were two Tanoim. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, this one. We have to figure out who the this one is referring to. I hate pronouns, right? Diomar Malacha Sheina Tzricha Legufa Chayav Ali. Ha Rabbi Shimon Diomar Malacha Sheina Tzricha Legufa Potter Ali. So Rashi tells us here that what is the case of Malacha Sheina Tzricha Legufa, which is the subject of a debate between Rav Shimon, who says you're potter, Rav Yehuda, who says you're chayav. It's a case of hotzah. Hotzah is one of the 39 malachas in which I uproot an object from its location in, let's say, Rishus HaYochid, a private domain. After uprooting it, I carry it in across the border into a Rishus HaRavim, a public domain. And number three, I place it down in a new location that's called Hanocha in Rishus HaRabim. So I started with what's called an Akira. Again, if I had a blackboard, I would write the word Akira on the blackboard. Start with an Ayin, which means to uproot something from a place where it is set. Then I move over to Avaras Rishuyos, meaning I cross the border into another Rishus. And then I get to Hanocha, which means to place it down in its new location. What happens if Ploni Almoni is interested in uprooting an object, getting it out of his private domain, but he couldn't care less where he places it down? There is no specific X on the ground location where he wants it to be. That's not the way they did it in the Mishkan. When they did it in the Mishkan, they took the kroshim, which are the, what do we call it in English, kroshim?
Boards.
Boards, okay, the boards. And they passed it from one agola, one wagon, to the other wagon. And it had to go into that second wagon. That's called the Hanochas Mokom. So again, I need a choir over here. And at the count of three, everyone's going to say Hanochas Mokom. Okay, one, two, three.
Hanochas Mokom.
Do you have it? Again, I know I'm treating you like children, but I only do so because that's my way of telling you certain things that you have to memorize. And if you don't memorize it, I can't help you, you know. Because I got your time maximum for 1 hour a day, so I got to make sure that you know, tomorrow if I put Hanochas Mokom. So Rav Shimon says, you know what? If you have to get this object out of here, all costs, it's foul odor, I can't tolerate it, I got to get it out of my Rishus. But I couldn't care less where in Rishus HaRabim I put it down. Therefore, as far as my intention is concerned, it's lacking in what? Hanocha, everybody? Hanochas Mokom. And Hanochas Mokom is an integral, essential part of the Malach of Hotzah. And in the absence of Hanochas Mokom, says Rabbi Shimon HaPotter. Again, I'm only talking on an intentional level. Get back to the brain again. As far as the physical reality is concerned, he put it down in a specific place. But he couldn't care less. As Shmuel said yesterday, he throws it out of his window. Right, Shmuel? That was your example.
Right.
So he throws it out of his window. He couldn't care less where it lands. I'll give you an example because most of you are familiar with baseball. So let's say I hit a home run. Does it matter to me where it lands and which, you know, whether you get the guy who caught it for the bleachers, you know, he was rooting for the Chicago Cubs and he caught the ball in the bleachers, or it went to this side or to that side? As long as it went over the fence, it's a home run. Right, okay. Babe Ruth is something different. You know, there are people who are so talented, they can tell you exactly where they're going to knock that home run. But for most of us, we can't do it that way. So that would be a malacha sheina tzricha legufa. I want to get it out of the field. The field is a rishus hayoch because it's surrounded by mechitzos, by fences. The fences have to be all of 10 tefachim high, which is pretty low. And that's any fence in any baseball, what do you call it, field is definitely 10 tefachim high. And it went over the field. Where it goes, where it lands, you know, in the bleachers, Rishon Sarabim, I don't care. I don't care if Yankel finds it, if Beryl catches the ball, I don't care. That's called the Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa. What does it mean, Ein Etzricha Legufa? He doesn't need the Malacha Legufa. Legufa means the way it was defined and the way it was the purpose of the Malacha as it was formulated in the Mishkan. You know, the Mishkan is always going to be our paradigm of what the tachlis of the Malacha is, meaning what's the purpose and the goal of the Malacha. In the case of Otsar, they wanted to get into the other Agola, and that's called Hanochas Makom. Here, it's Ein Etzricha Hanochas Makom. He's not interested in Hanochas Makom. For his part, it can land wherever it lands. You know, it got over the fence, and I'm perfectly satisfied with that. So Reb Shimon says, your intention doesn't meet up to the standards of the Gufa Shel Malacha, which is set by the Mishkan. The Mishkan is always going to be our barometer. Okay then? Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and he says, what are you talking about? Who cares whether it's a Malach Shein Etzricha Legufa or not? He wants to get the ball out of the field, out of the Rishus HaRabim, Yishus HaYochid, and he wants to put it down somewhere in Rishus HaRabim. He doesn't care where, but nevertheless, he has intention for the Malacha. Not the Gufa Shel Malacha, meaning the paradigmic Malacha as it was done in the Mishkan, but for the Malacha. Now that we have the machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda, what I'm about to say is very cynical. Okay, you shouldn't take me seriously. Now that we have the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about malachas and tzrich legufa, now I understand whether korea b'chamaso is padur or korea b'chamaso is chayach. Ki'ilu, as the Israelis would say. As if. Yeah. Ki'ilu. What does one have to do with the other? Okay, there's a machlokas between Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda about, you know, how much of an intention you have to have. Rav Shimon wants a very specific, pinpointed, you know, intention, very specific. It's got to fit exactly the intention that was done in that malach in the Mishkan. I'll give you another example. In the Mishkan, in order to build the Mishkan, they needed dyes, D-Y-E. So they had to plant certain herbs that later on they would cook it and it would give a color into the water, and that they used to dye the ureos. How do you say ureos? Curtains. The curtains of the Mishkan. So in order to get these herbs to grow, they had to plant seeds. In order to plant seeds, you have to dig a hole in the ground. That's called Meleches Choresh. Okay? I think that's the first on the list, if I'm not, or maybe Zoraya's first. Yeah. Anyway, so the Choresh means literally a plowing, which for our purposes means digging a hole. Now, what's the purpose of digging a hole? To plant. That's what it was done in the Mishkan. Says Rav Shimon, that becomes your paradigm for Meleches Charisha. Anytime that you dig a hole, I'm going to ask you the following question. What was your intention? Did you want to put something in the hole? Comes along Plony Almoni again, and he says, I have no intention of planting. So why are you digging a hole? I need the dirt. Why does he need the dirt? He's creating an utzitz. You know what an utzitz is? A flower pot. He needs dirt for a flower pot. Whatever he needs dirt for, I couldn't care less. Says Rav Shimon, you pot. Why? Because we dig holes in the Mishkan for planting. And you're not interested in the least bit in planting. So Malacha Shein Etzricha LeGufa, again, Gufa means the paradigm purpose of the Malacha as it was done in the Mishkan. You're digging a hole not for the sake of planting, but because you need the offer, you need the soil. That's Malacha Shein Etzricha LeGufa, says Rav Shimon Yepot. Comes over Rav Yehuda and he says, what are you talking about? The man wants to dig a hole. And he's not crazy. He's not a Meshuggah.
He doesn't need the hole, though.
He doesn't need the hole, but he needs the dirt. If he needs the dirt and he's digging a hole, and he intends to dig that hole, albeit not for the sake of the hole, but for whatever reason that he has, he's not a Meshuggah, he's not just wasting his time, then he has intention for the Malacha. In other words, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda puts all the emphasis on the Maisa Malacha. It's almost as if we were to take a video camera and see, right? And we saw that he did this with full intention. We look at the camera, he's digging a hole. Now the camera doesn't tell me whether he's digging a hole for purpose A or purpose B. So Rabbi Shimon says, wait a minute, it's not enough to take a video camera. We have to ask the guy, you know, or do a mental this, why are you digging a hole? If his answer is the right answer, which is the wrong answer, because he'll be chayav misa for that. But if he gives us the right answer and he says, I'm digging a hole because I want to plant in that hole, that's called a malacha tzrich legufa. If he gives us the wrong answer, which might be for him the right answer, and he says, I'm not digging a hole because I intend to plant, because I'm digging a hole because I intend to create an atzitz, you know, I need the dirt, that's called a malach shein tzrich leguf, and he's potter. Comes on Rabbi Yehud, and he says, no, I'm going back to the video. The video on the screen shows me that this man with full intelligence is digging a hole.
Man. It's called separation.
Oh, so now you're touching on a whole nother topic. That's called a dover shein miskav. Now watch what happens. Again, everything I'm telling you now, I want you to forget. No, I mean it, because Shabbos is one of the most complicated, you know, curriculums in Shas. And we can't do everything in one. It's a year, maybe a two, maybe even a 3-year course. I don't know. But Manny's asking me a very, very advanced question called, what's the difference between Malach Shein Tzrich Leguf and Dover Shein Miskaven? So again, Dov V'Tishkach. I want you to forget everything I'm telling you now. Dover Shein Miskaven means that he had no intention to do the pa'ula. He had no intention to do the pool. He was carrying chairs through a garden, and he thought that the garden was hard. You know, in the winter time, you know, when there's not that much rain coming back, the ground starts getting very hard, very tough. And lo and behold, for whatever reason, there was a leak in a pipe, and there was water, and it was soft, and he made holes in the ground. That's called a Dover Shein Miskaven. And then we get into Pesik Reisha. Dover Shein Miskaven means he had no intention of digging the hole. That's not our discussion for today. That's why I say you got to forget this discussion, because it's only going to confuse you. Our discussion for today is where he had full intention for the act that he was doing and the malacha that he was doing, namely digging a hole, which is choresh. Ask me a different question, for what purpose he was motivated. That's already a motivational question. That's not a lack of awareness. He's fully aware of what he's doing. But you ask him, what's his goal? Why is he motivated to do it? Are you a Meshuggah? Why are you digging holes here? The answer is, I need the dirt. That becomes a Malach Shein Tzrich Leguf.
So Rabbi Yehuda is the act itself, and Rav Shimon is the intention of doing
the intention of motivation, purpose, goal. What are, you have to be goal oriented, and your goal has to be equivalent to the goal of the paradigm. And what's the paradigm? The Mishkan. Good. That's Rav Shimon. What does that have to do with Korea Mechamos? Yeah.
No, I'm just saying it's still an issue to Ravana, because he did need
yes.
to do.
Yes.
He's having it in the video. Okay.
Again, Ravosai, you can't, as I said to you before, you're going to take on the whole of Shabbos and you'll get nowhere. Forget about the Ravanas. Right now, the Ravanas don't exist. They're classified information, because otherwise. On the question of the Ravanas, we could probably spend months and months and never be bored. But that's not what we're doing now. Now we're working with the rices. Okay, fine. So as I told you, I lost a lot of sleep on this, but here's what I came up with. You're the jury, and if I'm able to explain this in a clear way, then that's unbelievable. We start with the word litzorich. Okay, that's our heading for today. Litzorich. And we have a malach litzorich gufa, we have malach shalo litzorich gufa, right? Shein etzrich legufa. Comes along Reb Shimon, I'm sorry, scratch it. Comes along Reb Yehuda, and he says, you know how to define litzorech? Let's ask the guy. What's your tzara? Whatever he answers, as long as it's a half-intelligent answer, he has a tzara. It's a valid human tzara, a need, a benefit. That's enough. That's called litzara. Comes on Rav Shimon and he gives a different answer. What's litzara? It's got to be the identical tzara of the Mishkan. Let's take the case now of Korea Bechamos. Does he have a tzorech? Is he just a crazy man that went berserk and he's breaking down, you know, chairs and tables and he's ripping garments? Or does he have a tzorech that could possibly be, you know, you don't have to be a meshugana, it could possibly be valid?
Tzorech, you mean a cause that made him do that?
Tzorech means a benefit, a purpose, some sort of benefit.
What's the difference between a cause that caused it and a benefit? Because
all right, Manny, you're ahead of me. You're much more sophisticated than I am. Maybe we'll get into your question, but just on a very superficial level, because I want to get by first. You know, if I can get by the first crust, you know, then I can go.
Why?
Again, litzorech means what benefit do you get out of this action? Are you a total meshugana and you're doing things without any benefit? Like, I don't know, like a robot who has no brain? So the answer is he has a tzorech.
I need to do it.
Exactly. A tzorech means a need. It's his benefit, his need. He accomplished his need. What was his need? Says Rabbi Yehuda, I have a very broad understanding. Many, many things could answer that question. What's his need? Until you cross the red line and he's stam meshugana. But if he's not stam meshugana, then he has a need. Does he have a need to plant? The answer is no. But he has a need for the dirt. He needs the dirt. Does he have a need to put this foul, you know, odor object, you know, in a specific place outside of his rishus? The answer is no. But does he have a need? He has a need. He's got to get it out of here. That's a need. Does he have a need to rip his garment? And the answer is yes. He's not in the sugar. He's ripping his garment to alleviate himself from anger. Comes along Rav Shimon and he says the following. You know what? With all due respect to your need, that's not what what litzorech is. Litzorech is defined in objective terms by the Mishkan. The Mishkan will tell me in each of 39 malachas exactly what the tzorech is. Any other tzorech you have, kol hakavod. I respect you. You're not a mishugana. I'm not going to lock you up in an insane asylum. But that's not the litzorech that cuts the mustard. What was the litzorech of Meleches Korea? So the Gemara tells us that back in the Mishkan, they ripped certain, let's say, as they were weaving the ureos, what's it called in English, the curtains, sometimes there were knots in the stitching. They had to rip open these knots in order to restitch them. So they would rip in order to restitch. That is the tzorech of Kriya. Now, you may have other reasons for Kriya. You're an angry guy right now, you know, you just got fired from your job, and you feel like, you know, ripping, you know, like Shimshon HaGibor, you know, taking apart the whole thing, you know. Ga manochi ma plish, what's the possibility? Thomas Nafshi in Plishtim, whatever it is, you're angry, right?
Ripped up business.
That's a very nice tzorech, my friend. But from Reb Shimon's perspective, that's not enough. The litzorech of Kriya is what?
Amanas latai.
Is to rip up those stitches that are zigzag, that are full of knots or whatever they are, that have to be ripped up in order that you can restitch it in the proper way. That's the tzorech, and that's the only tzorech of Kriya that's called legufa, and if it's not legufa, you're pot. And Rav Olson, when I came up with this, and I told you I have to sweat this out, because Rashi doesn't say a word, I was very happy. I was proud. Until I asked myself the following question. How are you reading the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, HaKorea Bechamoso V'al Meso, etc., etc., Peturim, right? What did I skip? V'chol HaMekalkalim. Now, what does that mean, V'chol HaMekalkalim?
Anything that causes it.
Right, but what does that tell me, Manny, about the first two cases? If you follow my point. That those first two cases are just particular examples, I call them samples, you know, cases in point, of a general rule. Meaning, the Mishnah itself is going to answer the question, why are you patur in the case of Koreh b'chamasa? Again, we'll get to Meso again, and we put shelves Meso, but let's focus on Chamasa, because my brain, I have to think about one thing at a time. That's the problem with my brain. I can't multitask. My wife is great. I mean, she can think about 50 things at once. I have to think about one thing at one time. So in the case of Koreh b'chamasa, the Mishnah clearly establishes the reason why you're potter. You have to be a dumbbell not to read what's explicit in the Mishnah. And what's the Mishnah's answer to why you're potter? Mekalkel. It doesn't say because it's a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa.
I did notice that.
Okay.
But it can't be.
So misery loves company. Right. I feel good. You know.
It can't be the same thing, though.
They can't be. I'll tell you why. Because with regard to Mekalkel, we're going to have many, many different issues. And with regard to Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufo, we're going to have different issues. They're too complicated. For example, Mekalkel, again, this is far ahead of us, but is a tour of Meleches Machshevas.
Right.
But Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufo probably has nothing to do with Meleches Machshevas. Tosus says it has to do with a different principle, which is called Dumya de Mishkan. That's not Meleches Machshevas. Dumya de Mishkan means that the Mishkan is going to define certain specifics about Malacha, even though as far as the Chashivas of the Malacha, which is called Meleches Machshevas, you have perfect Chashivas. Meaning, if Reuven and Shimon are both digging a hole, I wouldn't say that Reuven's hole is less significant than Shimon's hole, because Reuven dug a hole for the purpose of this, and Shimon for the purpose of that. There's no chisaron, there's no deficiency in Meleches Machshevas. But if you talk about Dumya de Mishkan, which is a toast on Daf Tzadiyeh, that he says that Malach Shein Tzrich L'Guf Koyt Rav Shimon is part because it's not Dumya de Mishkan, then I understand. Reuven dug a hole, but it wasn't Dumya de Mishkan because he had no interest in what? In planting. Shimon dug a hole, and it is Dumya de Mishkan because he dug a hole in his field in order to plant. So, Bosai, we're going to stop here. And again, I'm just going to tell you what the program is. No, here's what the program is. This is the way Ben, if I understood, you know, I'm a loyal servant of Ben Goldfarb, who was in charge of organizing this program. And we're hoping that that maybe Yirmiyahu will be back. I don't know. Do we know if he's going to be back? He was here yesterday.
Jeremy Miller will be back next week.
Okay, good. So we'll have at least, until September 4th, we'll have at least five people. And then when Ben Goldfarb gets out of the hospital, we'll have as many as
he's out today.
Actually, yeah, good news. He's released today.
No. I mean, so when he gets back to our shir, I don't know, that'll take at least another day or two. But let's say on Sunday, well, miracle of miracles, if all of you gentlemen are here on Sunday, and if Yirmiyahu comes back, and if Ben is, you know, back to health, so to speak, that he can join us. So that will bring us up to six people, am I right?
Yeah.
Now, six is an even number, which is good. But anyway, the program is that we break up after the Shia into Chavruta learning. Okay, no, again, that's, I'm just saying the ideal. Everyone will decide for themselves. We're not signing anyone on a contract, as I said many times. Whatever works for you, and I'm happy with whatever works for you, especially if you come to my shiur. I'm pretty honest, I have to tell you. Okay, too honest. What I want you to finish up during the next period of time is, number one, continue in the Gemara and see if you can get down to all the way down till Amar Rav Shimon ben Pazi. Let me just show you where that is. If you see where the lines get wide. So Amar Rav Shimon ben Pazi is, I think, on line 7. Let me count if you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, I guessed it on the 7th line. Up until, but not including, Amar Rav Shimon ben Pazi. Okay then? That's number one. Hello?
Yeah.
So what I would do if it was mine, but you have your own thing, I would go up to here if you follow me. You know. Okay. Then I want you to go and skip ahead to Daf Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. And you'll have to remind me that the part that we're skipping we'll come back to when it's more relevant to us. And on line 3 you'll see two dots. Kol HaMekalkel. And here I just need you to learn basically 4 lines of Gemara, 5 lines maybe. from the Cholam HaKalkulin until V'ha'anan T'nan. So let's see, we're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5.5 lines. Do you see that? V'ha'anan T'nan, which is the 8th line down from the top of the page. And then, and this is the most challenging part, I need you to learn the Tosis Rid on the Sugi, which I gave out yesterday. If you haven't gotten a copy, we'll photocopy it for you now. And let me know when you finished all of those sources, because I have a heck of a lot more to give you, but I think that's enough for the balance of the day. And again, if anybody is interested, I'm going to talk a little bit later on today to my Balabatim here from the Amic Learning Center, that's at 11:45, about the concept of Meleches Machsheves Osra Torah. Okay, that's a different topic, a different Shia. It's not for our group, but you might benefit from it if you happen to be Chavrusalists at that time and free to join the Shia. I'm sure the members of our group would more than be happy to welcome. But again, that's not part of this program, because again, I have to be loyal to Ben, and Ben wants this program to be a Chavrusa program after the Shia. As I mentioned to you, I think Ben would certainly be happy if you wanted to join my Ashkofa Shia, which is Parsha oriented. That's on Sundays and Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Okay then? So Rabosai, get to work. Any questions?
Yeah,
okay, we'll photocopy this page. Speaking, I trouble you.